All right, it's time for us to go ahead and get started. I think it is interesting. I think I'll go ahead and make this point now, unless I forget to make it a little bit later. We talked about the Jews' names for these books of Kings and of Samuel and Kings. And the Jews had four books of the Kings. Now, we don't have that division at all, and these names are arbitrarily given to it. But the book that we call 1 Samuel, the Jews says, that's the first book of the Kings. And you got to get your grandma's old Bible that's about this thick, got all those helps in the back, and you'd be amazed. I don't know. I used to see that up there sometimes, otherwise called the first book of the Kings, and I thought, who on earth is that dumb? I know where the first book of Kings is, and that's in 1 Kings. And yet the more you study this, the more obvious it becomes. And I'm making this point right now just to, as a matter of introduction, to point out that in today's lesson, we will have a reference to 1 Chronicles. And that's amazing. And so that's even after 1 and 2 Kings becomes 3 and 4 Kings. 1 Chronicles becomes, and this is Dan's number, 5 Kings, because they all talk about the kings. Now, the difference in Kings and Chronicles is this. 1 and 2 Kings talks about both the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom. 1 Chronicles is about, it starts at David, and so it's a chronicle only of the southern kingdom, and that's a once you get that distinction, I used to read Kings, and I got lost, jumping back and forth, and I don't know if you've ever had that problem of, who is this? Who am I reading about here? And then, 10 verses later, you're back about another king, and I thought this guy was king. And so, but it really helps me to understand that the books of 1 and 2 Kings discuss the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom, and 1 and 2 Chronicles only talks about the southern kingdom. And so they're parallel many times. They are word for word parallel. Let's get to the lesson. And this is lesson 3. And the next slide means nothing to you, but it means everything to me. I've got to cover the entire book. And so I've already revised how we're going to cover the book. And so that means nothing. Those are my study notes, if that makes sense and everything. But here's where we are. We want to talk on April the 13th about Ishbosheth, Abner, and Joab. Now then, we also will likely get over to talk about Abner's death and all that transpires in relationship to this. And this is a part of Bible history that I was weak in, and I'm really thankful that I've been asked to teach this part of it. I'm seeing things in this that I really was not aware of. So let's get to the first slide of today's lesson, and we're going to move. Sometimes we'll be moving rather rapidly, and sometimes we'll be going very slow. David becomes king over Judah. Now, what's Judah? Well, later, this distinction between Judah and Israel will be very obvious. Judah is the southern kingdom. Israel is the northern kingdom. And so, keep that in mind. But when we talk about Judah, we're talking about Judah, and talking about when the division comes about. We're talking about Judah and Benjamin, and that's how that phrase is used. King Saul was from the tribe of Benjamin. And so whenever we talk about, and we're using the word Judah and Israel here because that means something to us, we're not talking about the tribe of Benjamin. We're talking about, as later divided, Benjamin is a part of that kingdom that does not follow David. It's only Judah that follows David. Benjamin does not follow David. So when we begin saying, this is the story about David being king over Judah, We really mean the southern kingdom, but that does not even include Benjamin, as it will later when that division becomes obvious and these words are used, because later it is Judah and Benjamin are the two tribes that are in the southern kingdom, and the 10 northern tribes are up there. But right now, even Benjamin is against David. And so we're talking about the things that transpire here, and the passage begins, 2 Samuel begins, with David's grief over the death of King Saul. The more I study this, the more I get, I've got a long way to go in relationship to other people. I guess that's what I'm saying. When I study this and I try to become David, I cannot have this attitude. Have you ever had somebody that you're sort of glad when they got out of your life? Go back to high school, go back to junior high or something like that, and there's somebody in school that just picked on you. You know, I remember Eddie Weaver. Man, oh man, first grade enemy. I am telling you, funny, I remember his name. I'm 6 years of age. And my cousin Judy and I, not this Judy, but another Judy, she and I walked to school, first graders. I don't know, 8 or 10 blocks, you know, that's back when it was safe to walk and everything. And coming home from school, Eddie Weaver started jumping out from behind the bushes and scaring us, and we were terrified. I mean, Eddie Weaver was 12 feet tall. He weighed 375 pounds, and he was really, really mean. Now, he really wasn't that tall, okay? He could have been a second grader, but he could have been in the first grade. And I am so glad. I was really happy when I got to the second grade and Eddie Weaver was not there. I mean, I remember Judy and I trying to find, let's go down this back alley. He's jumping out. He scares us and runs at us, and I don't know if we're running away from him. I don't know what sort of game he was playing with us, but then he'd run away, and then he'd go hide behind another tree. That's a terrifying thing when you've been, raised in your home, protected by your family and everything, and now you're out in this wide, wide world that is 10 blocks away from the house, and Eddie Weaver. I was so glad that Eddie Weaver was not in the second grade. Why? Well, he was a nemesis. Now then, think about King Saul and then make some application. If there's somebody in your life that really has bothered you in your life and you're sort of glad they moved away, would you be glad if they died? That is not David. The thing that astounds me, and it'll become even obvious as we look more in the lesson today, here's a man that is after God's own heart. And I want you to hear this. The Bible talks about Christ died for the ungodly while we were yet, you know that? His enemies. You know what God's like? God so loved the world. That's not just the nice world. God so loved the world. And David really had an attitude of respect toward King Saul. You remember in the study of 1 Samuel, there were two occasions that he could have killed David, and yet he would not do it. And we don't really have time to look at all of these things in 2 Samuel, but in 2 Samuel chapter 1. But in the latter part of 2 Samuel, now I don't know what translation you've got, but I've got the New King James, and when it comes, it lays the text out different when it becomes poetic. I mean, most Bibles are just verses and numbers and verses. They're all lined up. But I don't know if you can see in this Bible, when it is poetical language, like Psalms and Proverbs, Psalms and Song of Solomon, very poetic. And so starting down in verse 17 and 18, you have a song. You have a tribute. And this expresses the heart of David's regard for King Saul. His enemy is dead. How long has he been David's enemy? How old is David when he becomes king? If you remember, Harapak says, if Dan says how many, you give one of two answers. He's 40 years of age when he becomes king. How old was he when he killed Goliath? You pick a number, 15? If it's 15, if that's the number you pick as the teenage boys that goes up and kills Goliath, for 25 years, this guy has chased David all over Israel, trying to get rid of him. And look, starting in verse 19, the beauty of Israel is slain on your high places. How the mighty have fallen. And then he says, don't you tell it in all of these Gentiles, lest the daughters of the Philistines rejoice, lest the daughters of the uncircumcised triumph. Don't even publicize his death. Let's just let him die. And don't you give those who hated Saul, like the Philistines and others, give them any reason to rejoice. And so he says, Saul, and look in verse 23. Saul and Jonathan were beloved and pleasant in their lives, and in their deaths they were not divided. Swifter than eagles and stronger than lions. How's that for a man who's been chasing you for 25 years? Isn't that amazing? You're in the workplace and somebody mistreats you and everything. What's your attitude toward them? I mean, you start thinking about this, and all of a sudden, I understand why he's a man after God's own heart. But I think it gets even better as we develop this lesson. And so I want you to understand that David's path to being king was not an easy path at all. He becomes king. He becomes king over in Hebron, down in Judah, down in that southern kingdom. And the rest of the Jews are against him being king. Now, he reigns a total of 40 years. But I want you to understand, the first 7.5 years of his life as king, he's got major problems of even being king. Because, well, Saul has been chasing him for 25 years. If he's 15 when he kills Goliath, you want to make him 20, he kills Goliath. You know, you can if you want to, but for over 20 years, Saul has been he's been hiding in caves, he's been acting like he was insane just to escape, living in fear, at least fear that most individuals would have. And now all of a sudden he becomes king, and guess what the problem is? King Saul. King Saul has a son. And his name is Ishbosheth. And so we're going to spend quite a bit of time looking at three people whose names are on the screen. Ishbosheth and Abner and Joab. Saul's king. This is an insurrection as far as Israel is concerned. Who's the next king after the king dies? Well, it's obvious. It's the king's son. And so let's just talk about Ishbosheth, because he is the son of Saul, and he's age 40. I said David was 30, 40 when he became king. David was 30 when he became king. And so you knock back that 25 years by a bit anyway. But he's 40 when he is. Here's this man that is 40 years old. He's 10 years older than David. And could David have known him? Yeah. Because whenever he's introduced to us, he's a grown man. And his name's Ishbosheth. And he's Saul's son. And we talk about him not because he's a particularly important character, but he's a transitional character to show what the 7.5 years was like. And that is getting all of the Jews to accept him, getting all the Jews to accept him to be their king. And so here's Ishbosheth. Well, Ishbosheth is not a great man in and of himself. There is a man called Abner. Abner, and this is a name that you may not be acquainted with, but I hope you'll be acquainted with him in the next few minutes. He was the commander of Saul's army. Saul's dad's name was Kish. Kish had a brother named Ner, son of Ner. Abner was who we've got here. And so I think that makes them first cousins, right? Aren't you your uncle's kids are your cousin? Is that the way all that works out? Something like that. And so when Saul becomes king, the commander of his army is Abner. And then Saul dies. What does Abner do? Abner, military commander, you got to understand this. You know, you've got to understand what happens. Whoever controls the army controls the kingdom. And so here's Abner. He's the commander-in-chief is dead, but the commander's still alive. And so his influence is to help Ishbosheth. Getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. Abner is first introduced to David and to us. Well, not first introduced to us, but the first time of note is when David kills Goliath. Now, King Saul said, "Who is this young man?" And Joab said, Abner says, "I'm not sure." And then he finds out who he is. And so whenever David kills Goliath, do you remember how Goliath died? Was it that stone that hit him in the forehead? Is that when he died? No, that's not when he died. That's not what killed him. It's when he died. It is as he died. David takes Goliath's sword and chops Goliath's head off. Now, we are in some of the most gruesome times of the Bible. And you've got to understand that we are so refined. We're so nice to each other. But they don't live in a world that is refined by niceties like the world in which we live. You understand? You remember there was a time that there were things called gentlemen. And gentlemen, and here's another word they almost do not hear. Gentlemen, in the presence of ladies, always remove their cap as a matter of respect. Where's that world? Well, it's really, really, really different. And our world has become very, very much reactive to everything that's around. You talk about politically, you talk about in sports, you know. What happened to boxing matches where they fought each other with padded gloves? You know, this wide world of whatever they're doing, they don't have gloves on. They just have some so the hand doesn't get bruised a lot. And they're out there inside a cage trying to kill each other. The nicety of our world is changing. You may not be aware of it, But if you want to understand the violence that's sometimes in the streets, you got to look at the violence that's in our society. It's out there. And we who are older have trouble even trying to, well, why on earth would they do this? And why would they do that? You know, and you see all of this that's going on in the world. Well, you've got to understand, they were not in a nice world. And so what David did is what you do when you conquer the enemy. It is Abner that introduces David as a great man whenever he takes David with the head of Goliath and presents the head to King Saul. We're going to see several presentations of the head as we go through this part of the Bible. And that's a part of the gruesomeness that we're reading about this. Now then, let's jump ahead. Let's remember after David kills Goliath, King Saul's trying to kill him. Now let's jump to 2 Samuel. King Saul is dead, and so there is this man Abner. Well, what does he do? Well, let's go back to 1 Samuel for a minute. You remember David had two chances to kill Abner. Once was in a cave, and not to kill Abner, but to kill King Saul. David came into the cave. David's men said, "Kill him." A man after God's own heart said, "No, he's the Lord's anointed. He doesn't kill him." And then, a chapter or so later, Saul is over here with his army. He's asleep. David is over here. And David creeps over and takes a couple of things away. One of the things he takes away is the sword, and evidently, and guess who is the guard of King Saul? It's Abner. So whenever he has the proof that Abner was fallen, he stands up and he rebukes Abner. "Abner, you're king's commander-in-chief, and you're out here trying to destroy me. Let me show you what I could have done and what I did not do." And that's the time whenever King Saul backs off a little bit from killing David. Not for long, but he backs off from killing David. And so you've got, David had a chance to kill the commander-in-chief of the army that was destroying him. That's Abner. But he doesn't do this. We'll come back a little bit to this in just a minute. Let's talk about another character. And this is a name that is more prominent in 2 Samuel and the other, and that is Joab. Joab is a friend of David who becomes commander of David's army. And, when I say David's army, it's only later that David has an army. Who's commander-in-chief of King Saul's, the northern kingdom? Abner. Who's commander-in-chief of the southern kingdom, of that army? And that's Joab. And these two characters really have conflict. And these two characters are things that we need to keep in mind, because Joab's army meets Abner's army out of something called a pool, I think was in Gibeon, and there is a gross contest. You may not be aware of this, but let's see if I can find exactly. Yes. Look in chapter 2, starting in verse 12. Now Abner, the son of Ner, 2 Samuel chapter 2, verse 12. "And the servants of Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, went from Mahanaim to Gibeon." And so here is Abner and the servants who become the army go to a place called Gibeon. And Joab, and he gives his lineage, and the servants of David went out and met them by a pool in Gibeon. So they sat down, one on one side of the pool and the other on the other side of the pool. Is this political negotiation before war? I'm not sure exactly what is happening. There's a pool of water. And on one side, you got Abner. Can we call them the bad guys? Because they turn against David. And here's Joab and the good guys. That's not the best way to describe them, but so you'll understand who we're talking about. So Abner says to Joab, let the young men arise and compete before us. Is this shades of David and Goliath? Isn't that what Goliath did? Isn't that what the Philistines did? They put Goliath out as a challenger and says, whoever wins this battle. And none of the Jews, until shepherd boy David comes along with his slingshot, there's no Jews that will go up against Goliath. And so now then, we've got a contest, and the contestants are, they arose and went out by number, 12 from Benjamin, followers of Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, and 12 of the servants of David. Ready for Super Bowl? You ready for World Series? Each of them selects 12 men. And so here's Abner and Joab said, let's see who can win this battle. Now look at it. They arose and went over by number, 12 from Benjamin, 12 from David, verse 16. And each one grasped his opponent by the head and thrust his sword in the opponent's side. So they fell down together. Therefore, the place was called the Field of the Sharp Sword, which is in Gibeon. And so what happens? All of a sudden, as these individuals are being slain, the whole armies get involved. And so now we've got those who are the servants of David and those who are the servants of Ishbosheth, that's King Saul's son. There was a very fierce battle that day, and Abner and the sons of Israel were beaten before the servants of David. And so they chase each other, and there is a pretty good victory. I was looking for the number that were killed. Yes, verse 30, Joab, returning from pursuing Abner, when he had gathered all people together, there were missing David's servants, 19 men, and then a 20th man. But the servants of David had struck down of Benjamin and Abner's son 360 men. Pretty one-sided battle. And so now you have got the situation developed so that warfare is ready to go. I mean, there's already warfare. Abner is already pushing Ishbosheth to be the next king, and he's already persuading that northern kingdom to back King Saul. And then there is this battle. Now, in this battle, something transpires, and that is Joab's brother, who is described as being swift of foot. Look in verse 19. Asahel pursued Abner, and in going, he did not turn to the right or to the left. Look in verse 18. And Asahel was as fleet on foot as a wild gazelle. You got a picture? You ever seen a gazelle? You think of what you've seen, documentaries of Africa and everything. Do you know how fast a gazelle is? Gazelle? He is. And so he's chasing Abner. And he catches up to Abner, and Abner said, don't make me kill you. You're Joab's brother. And yet he will not surrender. And so And so Abner kills Joab's brother, the one who's fleet as a, who runs as fast as a deer. Now that's important. This one event is really important. You got Joab's brother. He's in the obviously in Joab's army. Whenever the bad guys are running, now Asahel is running after them. He has a chance to kill. At least hopes he has a king a chance to, but he's not able to. Now that's this battle. Look in chapter 3. Now there was a long war between the house of Saul and the house of David. We're talking about what's about to transpire. There's a long war. And the statement is, it lasted a long, long time. David grew stronger and stronger, and those of Saul grew weaker and weaker. So then in 2 Samuel, you've got a list of David's sons, at least the sons that he had had by this time. And starting in verse 6, something's happening. We've got Abner up there, and you've got Ishbosheth, the bad guys, King Ishbosheth and General Abner. Now it was so that while there was war between the house of Saul and David, that Abner was strengthening his hold on the house of Saul. And Saul had a concubine, and there's her name. And Ishbosheth, what do you mean, Abner? You have slept with my father's concubine. What's that all about? You remember what Absalom does whenever he kills, whenever he chases David out of Jerusalem? You remember the beds he put up on that housetop? We'll read about this a little bit later in this book. Put beds in the open on the housetop and openly violated David's wives. The concubines of the kings belongs to the next king. And Ishbosheth says, what are you doing sleeping with my father's concubines? Now, whether that's true or not, the text does not say, but that is the charge. Abner became very angry at this charge that King Ishbosheth had brought against him. And he said, I have shown loyalty to the house of David, your father, and to his brothers and to his friends, and I have not delivered you into the hands of David. And you charge me today with a fault concerning this woman. And so, David said, God being my helper, if I do not do for David as the Lord has sworn to David. What does Abner know? Abner knew of a prophecy that David would be the next king. He's fighting against it. And he says, you know, I've protected you, Ishbosheth, and now you turn on me. And then he says, God being my helper, and here's what I'm going to do, that I will come under the judgment of God if I do not turn and help David like I've turned to help you to be king. To transfer the kingdom from the house of Saul and set up the throne of David over Jerusalem and over Judah from north to south. A lot of political interactions going on here. Don't know about it. I'd read this six times before I ever really got the emotional aspect of all of this. Ishbosheth, it's over. what does Abner do? Well, Ishbosheth has turned against against him, and so Abner offers to bring Israel to David, and after leaving him, is then killed by Joab. It's pretty vicious. What happened? Well, Abner says to Ishbosheth, "I'm going to David." He goes to see David, and there is an alliance of some kind made between David and Abner so that David now can be king over all of the Jews. He's got the commander-in-chiefs of both the northern army and the southern army, and they're backing him. And so what does Joab do? Well, you can give the wrong motives about being jealous and not having two commanders in chief. I don't know that's not in the text at all. There's the man that killed my brother. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. I'm going to take care of him. And unbeknownst to David, whenever Abner leaves the presence of David, and he departs, evidently to rally all of Israel to come and to be supportive of David, Joab sends messengers and says, "And come back, and I've got something I want to tell you." And he came back and he killed him right there on the spot. You're David. How do you feel toward a man who has been the commander-in-chief of Saul's army, evidently the whole time you've been fleeing from King Saul? And now David is ready to become king, and who's the problem? It's Abner. And so he turns against David. He'd been trying to kill David, and now he turns against David and is ready to get King Saul's son to be king. Now then, the guy turns his heart toward David. And so now he's dead because Joab murders Abner. It is funny when you get down to verse 31 of this chapter. David said to Joab and to all the people who were with him, "Tear your clothes, clothe yourself with sackcloth, and mourn for Abner." This is his enemy. When I look at Abner and I become David, I think, good riddance. I'm glad Eddie Weaver's not in the second grade. You understand? It's that kind of a response. And so David finds out how it is all come about. Look in verse 23, jumping back earlier in the chapter. When Joab and all the troops that were with him had come, they told Joab, saying, "Abner the son of Neb is dead, and he sent him away, and it's gone in peace." Joab came to the king and said, "What have you done? Abner came to you. Why is it you sent him away? You should have killed him when he was here. Surely you recognize that it is Abner, the king of Ner. He came to deceive you, to know you're going in and you're going out, and to know what you're doing." And when Joab had gone from David's presence, he sent men after Abner, and he brought him back from the well. David did not know it. When Abner returned, took him aside to speak with him privately and stabbed him in the stomach so that he died. When David hears of it, "My kingdom and I are guiltless before the Lord forever for the blood of Abner. I had nothing to do with Abner's death." Then he says, "Let it rest on the head of Joab." And he says, Joab, here's a curse. Let there never be, come a time when there failed to be in the house of Joab one who had a discharge of blood or a leopard, and one who is old, who leans on the staff or falls by the sword, or who lacks bread. Joab, you've killed a good man. Isn't that funny? The picture we've presented of Abner has not been good. But I'm looking at it from Dan's heart. You want to see? Look in look in chapter 3, verse 38. The king says to his servants, and he's talking about Abner, "Do you not know that a prince and a great man has fallen this day in Israel? And I am weak today, though I'm a king, been anointed king. And these men," and this is Joab, because he's one of the son of Zeruiah, "are too harsh for me. The Lord will repay these evildoers for what they've done." What do you do with anger? You want to get personal? Somebody's wronged you. A prince has fallen. Did it make him say, "Yeah, he turned against me"? But he turned back. And here's a man that has turned back to David and asked forgiveness. And David's glad. You think the person that bothers you the most in your life, why is this story in the Bible? I don't need to know this. I don't need these first three or four chapters to know that David becomes king. Oh, yes, I do. I need these things because it is important that I have these things. And he wept for his enemies. And we've got to understand that very thing. The death of Ishbosheth, his head is brought to David. And when those who have killed Ishbosheth bring Ishbosheth's head to David, you know what David does? He kills the man who killed Ishbosheth. He had it coming. That's mine. I'm sort of glad it's happening. Why is this in the Bible? I don't know about you, but I'm thankful this story's in the Bible because I need it in my life. Whatever things are written aforetime, are written for us. And there may be multitudes of reasons why this story is in the Bible, but it'll help you see why David would not kill King Saul. And he would have killed Joab, but he couldn't. And he rewarded with a curse those who'd killed Abner, and now those who'd killed Ishbosheth. He's a man after God's own heart. Put up the next slide. Here's where we're headed next week, and that is, if you can put up that next slide, David rules the nations. Look what. David conquers Jerusalem and it becomes the capital. David conquers the Philistines, the Hadadezer, Damascus, Edom, the Amorites, Philistines, the Amalekites, and his greatness is known, and he brings all of those treasures so he can build Solomon's temple. So we can build it. It's going to be David's temple, not Solomon's. We're not going to spend a lot of time here next week. I just want you to understand, it takes him a while, and now he's king over all of it. That's where we're headed. All right, that's it for today.